A little farther along, we came across a bandit armed with a shotgun and squatting behind a big slab of limestone. This man's name was Harold Parmalee. I believe he was simple-minded. He gobbled at me like a turkey until Lucky Ned Pepper made him hush. Greaser Bob was told to stay there with him behind the rock and keep a watch below. I had seen this Mexican gambler fall from Rooster's shots at the dugout, but he appeared now to be in perfect health, and there was no outward evidence of a wound. When we left them there, Harold Parmalee made a noise like, "Woo-ha!" And this time it was the greaser who made him hush. Lucky Ned Pepper pushed me along in front of him through the brush. There was no trail. His woolly chaps sang as they swished back and forth, something like corduroy trousers. He was little and wiry, and no doubt a hard customer, but still his wind was not good, and he was blowing like a man with asthma by the time we had ascended to the bandit's lair. They had made their camp on a bare rock shelf, some 70 yards or so below the crest of the mountain. Pine timber grew in abundance below and above and on all sides. No apparent trails led to the place. The ledge was mostly level, but broken here and there by deep pits and fissures. A shallow cave provided sleeping quarters, as I saw bedding and saddles strewn about inside. A wagon sheet, now pulled back, served for a door and windbreak. The horses were tied in the cover of trees. It was quite windy up there, and the little cooking fire in front of the cave was protected by a circle of rocks. The site overlooked a wide expanse of ground to the west and north. Tom Chaney was sitting by the fire with his shirt pulled up, and another man was ministering to him, tying a pad of cloth to his wounded side with a cotton rope. The man laughed as he cinched the rope up tight and caused Chaney to whimper with pain. "Whoa, whoa, whoa," said the man, making sounds like a bawling calf in mockery of Chaney. This man was Farrell Parmalee, a younger brother to Harold Parmalee. He wore a long blue army overcoat with officer's boards on the shoulders. Harold Parmalee had participated in the robbery of the Katy Flyer, and Farrell joined the bandits later that night when they swapped horses at Ma Parmalee's place. The Parmalee woman was a notorious receiver of stolen livestock, but was never brought to law. Her husband, Henry Joe Parmalee, killed himself with a dynamite cap in the ugly act of wrecking a passenger train. A family of criminal trash. Of her youngest boys, Carol Parmalee lived long enough to be put to death in the electric chair. And not long afterward, Daryl Parmalee was shot to death at the wheel of a motor car by a bank dick and a constable in Mena, Arkansas. No, do not compare them to Henry Starr or the Dalton brothers. Certainly Starr and the Daltons were robbers and reckless characters, but they were not simple, and they were not altogether rotten. You will remember that Bob and Grat Dalton served as marshals for Judge Parker, and Bob was a fine one, they say. Upright men gone bad. What makes them take the wrong road? Bill Doolin, too. A cowboy gone wrong. When Lucky Ned Pepper and I gained the rock ledge, Chaney jumped up and made for me.
"I will wring your scrawny neck," he exclaimed.
Lucky Ned Pepper pushed him aside and said,
"No, I won't have it. Let that doctoring go and get the horses saddled. Lend him a hand, Fal."
He pushed me down by the fire and said,
"Sit there and be still."
When he had caught his breath, he took a spyglass from his coat and searched the rocky dome to the west. He saw nothing and took a seat by the fire and drank coffee from a can and ate some bacon from a skillet with his hands. There was plenty of meat and several cans of water in the fire, some with plain water and some with coffee already brewed. I concluded the bandits had been at their breakfast when they were alarmed by the gunshot down below. I said, "Can I have some of that bacon?" Lucky Ned Pepper said,
"Help yourself. Have some coffee."
"I don't drink coffee. Where is the bread?"
We lost it. Tell me what you're doing here.
I took a piece of bacon and chewed on it. I will be glad to tell you, said I. You will see I am in the right. Tom Chaney there shot my father to death in Fort Smith and robbed him of 2 gold pieces and stole his mare. Her name is Judy, but I do not see her here. I was informed Rooster Cogburn had grit, and I hired him out to find the murderer. A few minutes ago, I came upon Chaney down there watering horses. He would not be taken in charge, and I shot him. If I had killed him, I would not now be in this fix. My revolver misfired twice.
He will do it, said Lucky Ned Pepper. He'll embarrass you every time.
Then he laughed. He said,
most girls like play pretties, but you like guns, don't you?
I don't care a thing in the world about guns. If I did, I would have one that worked. Chaney was carrying a load of bedding from the cave. He said,
I was shot from ambush, Ned. The horses was blowing and making noise. It was one of them officers that got me.
I said, how can you stand there and tell such a big story? Chaney picked up a stick and pitched it into a big crack in the ledge. He said,
there's a ball of rattlesnakes down there in that pit, and I'm going to throw you in it. How do you like that?
No, you won't, said I. This man will not let you have your way. He is your boss, and you must do as he tells you.
Lucky Ned Pepper again took his glass and looked across at the ridge.
Chaney said,
5 minutes is well up.
I'll give him a little more time, said the bandit chieftain.
How much more?
Said Chaney.
Till I think they've had enough.
Greaser Bob called up from below, saying,
they are gone, Ned. I can hear nothing. We had best make a move.
Lucky Ned Pepper replied,
hold fast for a while.
Then he returned to his breakfast. He said,
was that Rooster and Potter that waylaid us last night?
I said, the man's name is not Potter, it is LaBeef. He is an officer from Texas. He is looking for Chaney too, though he calls him by another name.
Is he the one with a buffalo gun?
He calls it a Sharp's rifle. His arm was hurt in the fight.
He shot my horse. A man from Texas has no authority to fire at me.
I know nothing about that. I have a good lawyer at home.
Did they take Quincy and Moon?
They are both dead. It was a terrible thing to see. I was in the very middle of it.
Do you need a good lawyer? I need a good judge. What about Hayes? An old fella.
Yes. He and the young man were both killed.
I saw Billy was dead when he was struck. I thought Hayes might have made it. He was as tough as boot leather. I'm sorry for him.
Are you not sorry for the boy Billy?
He should never have been there. There was nothing I could do for him.
How did you know he was dead?
I could tell. I advised him against coming and then give in to him against what I knowed was best. Where did you take him?
To McAllister's store.
I will tell you what he did at Wagner's switch.
My lawyer has political influence.
This will amuse you. I posted him with the horses out of danger and told him to fire a string of shots with his rifle now and then. You must have shooting for the way it keeps the passengers in their seats. Well, he started out all right, and then as the job went along, I noticed the shots had stopped. I figured Billy Boy had run for home and a plate of mother's soup. Bob went to see about him, and he found a boy standing out there in the dark, shucking good shells out of his guns. He thought he was shooting, but he was so scared he could not remember to pull the trigger. That was how green he was, green as a July persimmon.
I said, you do not show much kindly feeling for a young man who saved your life.
I am happy he done it, said Lucky Ned Pepper. I don't say he want game. I say he was green. All kids is game, but a man will keep his head and look out for his own self. Look at old Hayes.
Well, he's dead now, but he should have been dead 10 times afore now. Yes, and your good friend Rooster. That goes for him as well.
He is not my friend. Farrell Parmalee made a whooping noise like that of his brother and said,
"There they be."
I looked over to the northwest and saw two riders approaching the top of the ridge. Little Blackie, riderless, was tied behind them. Lucky Ned Pepper brought his glass into play, but I could see them well enough without such aid. When they reached the crest, they paused and turned our way, and Rooster fired a pistol in the air. I saw the smoke before the noise reached us. Lucky Ned Pepper pulled his revolver and fired an answering shot. Then Rooster and LaBeef disappeared over the hill. The last thing I saw was Little Blackie. I think it did not come home to me until that moment what my situation was. I had not thought Rooster or LaBeef would give in to the bandits so easily. It was in my mind that they would slip up through the brush and attack the bandits while they were disorganized, or employ some clever ruse known only by detectives to bring the bandits to heel. Now they were gone. The officers had left me. I was utterly cast down, and for the first time, I feared for my life. My mind was filled with anxiety. Who was to blame? Deputy Marshal Rooster Cogburn. The gabbing, drunken fool had made a mistake of 4 miles and led us directly into the robber's lair. A keen detective. Yes, and in an earlier state of drunkenness, he had placed faulty caps in my revolver, causing it to fail me in a time of need. That was not enough. Now he had abandoned me in this howling wilderness to a gang of cutthroats who cared not a rap for the blood of their own companions, and how much less for that of a helpless and unwanted youngster. Was this what they called grit in Fort Smith? We called it something else in Yell County. Lucky Ned Pepper shouted out for the original greaser and Harold Parmalee to leave their watch post and come to the camp. The 4 horses were saddled and in readiness. Lucky Ned Pepper looked over the mounts, then at the spare saddle that lay on the ground. It was an old saddle, but a handsome one, decorated with fixtures of beaten silver. He said,
"That is Bob's saddle."
Tom Cheney said,
"It was Bob's horse we lost."
"That you lost," said the bandit chieftain. "Unsaddle that gray and put Bob's saddle up."
"I am riding the gray," said Cheney.
"I have other plans for you."
Cheney set about unsaddling the gray horse. He said,
"I will be riding behind Bob?"
"No, it will be too chancy with 2 men up if it comes to a race. When we reach Ma's house, I will send Carol back to fetch you with a fresh mount. I want you to wait here with the girl. You will be out by dark. We are going to the old place, and you can meet us there."
"Well, I don't like that," said Cheney. "Let me ride with you, Ned, just out of here anyway."
"No."
"Them marshals will be up here.
They will guess we are all gone."
I said, "I am not staying here by myself with Tom Cheney." Lucky Ned Pepper said,
"That is the way I will have it."
"He will kill me," said I. "You have heard him say it. He has killed my father, and now you will let him kill me."
"He will do no such thing," said the bandit chieftain. "Tom, do you know the crossing at Cypress Forks, near the log meeting house?"
"I know the place."
"You will take the girl there and leave her."
Then, to me,
"You can stay the night in the meeting house. There is a dummy called Flanagan, lives about 2 miles up the creek. He has a mule, and he will see you to McAllister's. He cannot speak or hear, but he can read. Can you write?"
"Yes," said I. "Let me go now on foot. I will find my way out."
"No, I won't have it. Tom will not harm you. Do you understand that, Tom? If any harm comes to this child, you do not get paid."
Cheney said,
"Farrell, let me ride up with you."
Farrell Parmalee laughed and made noises like an owl, saying, "Hoo, hoo, hoo." Harold Parmalee and the original greaser Bob came up, and Chaney commenced to plead with them to share their mount. Greaser Bob said no. The Parmalee brothers now teamed together like silly boys and would give Chaney no sensible answer. Harold Parmalee would interrupt Chaney's question each time with mockery, making animal sounds such as are made by pigs and goats and sheep, and Farrell would laugh at the sport and say,
"Do it again, Harold. Do a goat."
Chaney said,
"Everything is against me."
Lucky Ned Pepper made sure the buckles were fastened good on his saddle wallet. Greaser Bob said,
"Ned, let us cut up the winnings now."
"There will be time for that at the old place," replied the bandit chieftain.
"We have been in two scraps already," said the greaser. "We have lost two men. I would feel easier if I was carrying my own weanings."
Lucky Ned Pepper said,
"Well, Bob, I thought your interest was in saving time."
"You will not take long. I will feel easier."
"Very well, then. It suits me. I want you to feel easy."
He reached inside one of the saddle wallets and pulled out four packets of greenbacks and pitched them to Greaser Bob.
"How is that?"
Greaser Bob said.
"You will not count it?"
"We won't quarrel over a dollar or two."
Then he gave one packet to Harold Parmalee and a single $50 note to Farrell Parmalee. The brothers said,
"Hoo-ha! Hoo-ha!"
I wondered that they did not press for more in light of the total amount realized in the robbery, but I supposed they had agreed to a fixed wage for their services. I judged, too, that they were somewhat ignorant of the value of money. Lucky Ned Pepper went to buckle up the wallet again. He said,
"I'll keep your winnings with mine, Tom. You'll be paid tonight at the old place."
Chaney said,
"Nothing is going right for me."
Greaser Bob said,
"What about the registered pouch?"
"Well, and what about it?"
said Lucky Ned Pepper.
"Are you expecting a letter, Bob?"
"If there is any money in it, we may as well have it now. It makes no sense to carry the pouch about for evidence."
"You still don't feel easy?"
"You are making too much of my words, Ned."
Lucky Ned Pepper thought about it. He said,
"Well, maybe so."
Once more, he unbuckled the straps. He took out a locked canvas bag and cut it open with a Barlow knife and dumped the contents on the ground. He grinned and said,
"Christmas gift."
Of course, that is what children shout to one another early on Christmas morning, the game being to shout it first. I had not thought before of this disfigured robber having had a childhood. I expect he was mean to cats and made rude noises in church when he was not asleep. When he needed a firm, restraining hand, it was not there. An old story. There were only six or seven pieces of mail in the bag. There were some personal letters, one with $20 in it, and some documents that appeared to be of a legal description, such as contracts. Lucky Ned Pepper glanced at them and flung them away. A bulky gray envelope tied with ribbon held a packet of $120 notes on the Whelper Commercial Bank of Denison, Texas. Another envelope held a check. Lucky Ned Pepper studied it, then said to me,
"Do you read well?"
"I read very well," said I. He passed over the check.
"Is this any good to me?"
It was a cashier's check for $2,750 drawn on the Granger's Trust Company of Topeka, Kansas, to a man named Marshall Purvis. I said, "This is a cashier's check for $2,750 drawn on the Granger's Trust Company of Topeka, Kansas, to a man named Marshall Purvis."
"I can see what it's worth," said the bandit. "Is it any good?"
"It is good if the bank is good," said I, "but it must be endorsed by this Purvis. The bank guarantees the check account is good."
"What about these notes?"
I looked over the banknotes.